for the players.
This is not football content.
I was so genuinely perplexed. I was actually willing to see, like, watch you watch talk football, and then I didn't get it. Instead, I got you playing TMNT. Either way, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And I'm Paul James.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast with like 50 years playing PlayStation and near 20-something years this game's meeting. But I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to join us in future conversations, come check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. Those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/popcultures. We want to record this show live where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. And I've made the camera so much worse.
Absolutely. I don't change my shant. Fiddles with...
No, it's because when I had to open the shutter, it cracked it at me. So he's doing a different sport now. Hey, that works.
Now he's just got his hey guys pose. Hey guys!
I forget what I was saying. If you want to watch the show live, you go to twitch.tv/popcultures, blah, 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 blah. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. More support us financially, can patreon.com/thepopculturist. There you go. Yeah, no, I don't mess with the like audio shit. The camera though, yeah, that slider though is frustrating. But how are we, gents? How are we doing?
Going all right. Public holiday weekend.
Yeah, back to work afterwards. Happy Australia Day if it's a pop day that you celebrate or whatever. I know it varies from person to person.
It's a very controversial day, so
that it is.
Let's get it done.
Yeah, I myself am still working, so I'll just take the benefit of the public holiday rates. That's what I'm going to go for. But
that's fair.
What about yourself, Max?
I'm not working, but I'm going to get paid for it. So, you know, benefits.
Oh, that's that good. I do miss that full-time employment. It does have its benefits.
I have no idea if I'm supposed to be working. My boss just emailed me Friday and goes, "You don't work public holidays, right?" I'm like, "Ah, I don't think so."
It depends which one.
Normally, if it's a national holiday, I tend to not have to work. So,
But this
we'll
public
cross that bridge. We'll cross
public,
that bridge on Tuesday.
Probably this public holiday long weekend. It's been a straight up scorcher. Yesterday was like what 40 degrees or something.
Pardon me. You see, it's gonna be 40 again on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's like 42 or something. I saw. Gross.
First day of my new job, and it's 42 degrees, and I'm real fucking excited for that.
No, I get straight into it. But how you guys been? How'd you fight the weekend, Max? How'd it go with the two little ones running around being chaos, I assume? The heat, don't go outside.
Yeah, they haven't been too bad. We Hadley had some leftover Christmas money and whatnot, so she went out and bought herself a new toy, so she's been running around with this fucking digital hamster thing. It's fucking driving us crazy. Ollie just played in the water outside constantly. The hose was just on permanently over the weekend. Nice. And he's just out there living his best life. So, but he decided to nap until 4 o'clock this afternoon. So he's currently still awake. Okay. So there may be random like screaming, shouting, and growling coming from the background. So we'll see how that goes.
Not too bad at all. Well, yourself, Padge, as everyone may or may not know, you do record in a shed. So the heat is a different beast in here.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about the background noise. Every dog in the neighborhood is losing its shit right now and might have decided to lose theirs right outside the shed door.
No, the Discord is doing a brilliant job of noise gating you real
hard. Oh, fantastic. Good, good, good.
It's awesome new setup, you know, with thanks to the your Hoops crew.
Yeah, another bit of profit's been spent wisely. Mute's just kind of cottoning onto it there in the chat too. Yeah, this is my shed. Directly behind the camera is lawnmowers and whippersnippers and like manly tools and stuff.
Ooh, and then games.
And then like games also down one side, and then studio space here, and the chainsaw's just on the other side, which I managed to nick my hand with last week, and that was fun. And you can tell how manly I am because I managed to nick my hand with a chainsaw, and it's not really how chainsaws are supposed to be used.
No, not commonly.
But they're going all right. It's not too bad in here. Earlier today, it was awful. I think I messaged you guys and said it was about 7 degrees Celsius for those who need it. Warmer in here than it was outside, and it was a scorcher outside. So
yeah, so well, because mute in the chat being
it's dialed down nicely now.
Being an American, so it's currently the other temperature. It's winter up in the US at the moment.
Yeah.
So we're although while we're sitting here in what yeah.
Was it, it's 104 freedom units at the moment.
Damn. Not what the F stands for, but that's okay.
Huh? What was that?
That's not what the F stands for.
That would be the maximum.
But it makes
sense. What are we now? What's the temperature now?
It's still like 30. It's still like 34 here at the moment.
Holy shit! Okay, right. Really? For me, it's dropped. For me, it's dropped. I'm 10 degrees cooler than you right now.
Which is still 93 freedom units.
Wow. See, that's like the one.
That's what they call them, right?
The one disadvantage that we have here in Australia is we get these blasting hot summers. But like, I'm sure if Mute did the conversion from freedom units to if it's the Australian, if it's the Caesars, cunts, I guess.
Cuck units? I don't know.
Yeah, from freedom units to cunts. So with today, you know, yeah, okay, being like, you know, 40 cunts. You know.
I'm losing my job at this Catholic school, aren't I?
Oh, maybe. So, like, I am curious as to, like, what, like, the coldest that they're experiencing. Because, like, I guess for us,
it snows there, and it doesn't snow here. So.
Well, that's what I mean. But, like, depending on where he is, it could be even colder again, right?
Well, he's not in Canada.
I don't forget where he is. I never asked. I'm not
gonna drop in the comments what temperature it is in Fahrenheit or freedom units.
Yeah, just dox yourself, mate. It's time while everyone's out. But no, like I said, for myself, it's been a pretty good week. Working as usual, which has been lovely. Busy wrestle weekend. I had 3 shows. I had Friday and Saturday over in Essendon with the Renegades of Wrestling, and then today, the time of recording, Sunday, I had one in Torquay, so it was 10 minutes down the road, and it was the best drive to a show ever. I took one left, I took one right, and I drove for approximately 10 minutes, and I was where I needed to be. It was this nice, lovely stadium on the Torquay Highway. The show was like about 2.5 hours. It was really punchy and tight and cool. But very similar to, you know, yourself, Padge. We're talking, you know, we're joking, I was joking previous weeks about how, you know, you and I are on similar paths in like with our, obviously we have our game stuff, but which you also do better. And then our sports life, which, you know, was our wrestling for me and, you know, sports.
AFL for me.
AFL for you, which, you know, you're doing pretty good at too. But this week, I sort of had this awesome realization about my wrestle world. Like I said, I've been doing it for...
You finally realized it's acting.
No. I finally realized, I'm like, this shit's fake. Not one of these people are punching each other. No, because like I've been in it for 5 years now, and I've, you know, I have put a lot of time and effort and work into it. A lot of sacrifice of my time, my weekends and all this. And I'm right now at this precipice moment. And I'm sure in a lot of ways it feels very similar to Pop C, even though we haven't really blown up and, you know, grown in a while. But like there was a time where it ticked over, where it went from just something we did to something like, you know, successful in our metrics. They became something that we made some money from, something, you know, like we were seeing respect in the space and all this, the other. We started becoming known and supported. And I'm getting that now in the wrestling. So I'm just about to step into, I've been offered to work essentially the biggest company in the state. So that means I'm going to get paid, okay, which dope.
Ooh.
It's an opportunity to do what I do with, in this case, just sound tech, but they're also going to get me to do comms for another company as well, which is in that space too. You know, so I'm now hitting like that upper echelon in the wrestle world. So like, yeah, for the longest time I've been working in like rinky dink community centers, and I'll continue to do so because like I love those shows and where I, and you know, all my friends that are there too. But yeah, I'm just heading into this new stage of it. And it's really kind of nice. It feels like all of it's been for something, right? And I guess for you, Padge, as well, like with, you know, with your long-term love of AFL, to be able to make content that is like supported and like get some money enough for you to buy some gear, like it's turning into something bigger than you expected.
Yeah, yeah, I was pretty happy. Just kind of, I initially got on board doing interviews, a bit like what I was doing for Dev Diary, and then all of a sudden I'm reacting to games. I'm doing, you know, post game therapy sessions, what I dubbed it after we lost the grand final last year. For 4.5 hours, it was just me and one caller after another, churning through lots of very emotional people when you lose a grand final. It was pretty miserable to sit on the other side of those, but it's good. And and I'm probably a bit like yourself through the wrestling, like some of the relationships you make along the way, the people you meet, and different types of interests that those people have versus the types of people that I might interact with through, you know, being on this show or just through any of the Player 2 work that I've done over the years. It's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, no, it is. It's really cool because it does. Yeah, it feels like it's all been worth something. It's all starting to pay off, right? Literally, both financially and in terms of, have, you know, seeing your work be good. So not to like brag, but just kind of extend the point. Like, so today, this company that I work for, that I did the work for, they the guy that runs it owns the big company, like Melbourne City Wrestling, which is the big guys, right? And I got recommended because I've done sound for a bunch of other shows, a bunch of other companies. And he's like, cool, I've heard you're good. Do you want to come give it a bell? And so he gives me a ring, and because this is actually treated like a proper business. So like, you know, everyone's invoiced, you're not like just cash in hand. It's all this, all through proper communication channels. So he gives me a ring, essentially like a pre-screener, and he's asking like, hey, what, you know, how'd you get in the space? And I explained that, you know, I started here and I did this and I did that and da 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 da, and I told this journey. And he's like, oh, hang on, I was just gonna told you you're able to do like sound, and oh, you can do comms too. Okay. Oh, interesting. Fantastic. So that was it. So that opened another door over here. And then today, so I kind of had to jigger around a little bit the audio gear in the stadium to make it work. And when I got it done, you know, and the show went well, went without an issue. And then when he came up and had a look at the little jerry rig setup and all the gear that I brought to help make it happen, he's like, man, you like, You can do a bit of shit, can't you? And I'm like, yeah, man. He's like, all right, well, we're going to have another chat, because I think it was one of those moments, you know, when you, like, I'm sure you've both, I'd like to think you've both had it before, is when someone meets you and they go, I'm not quite sure what it is yet, but there's something that I think we can work together. And, like, that's been really cool. And it's like, it's been, as I said, like, nice reaffirming of it all, which is great. And then by extension, at least for us, is, you know, one of the big telltale signs that you make it in the games biz is that we get review codes that we're allowed to mess about with. It's really lovely. It's kind of a sign that you made it, right? So that's a really clunky transition into the games that we have been playing this week. Speaking of games for review, Padge, you have been dropping at one for like three shows now, saying the naming when you shouldn't have, acknowledging its existence, but now you can finally
directing people
it.
To my trophies because yep. I didn't have to hide them. Mio Memories in orbit, which was a weird one because when we were live last week, the embargo hadn't lifted. By the time the show went to air, the embargo had lifted, so I still couldn't talk about it for the show. It was a weird one. Yep. But yeah, it's all up now. Metroidvania, if I'm giving people the top level on it, Metroidvania, very similar in a lot of ways to kind of the vibes and feeling and even difficulty of something like a Hollow Knight. But there's, I guess, like any game in any genre, there's little points of difference, different bits of flavor there that kind of make it feel a little bit different, play a little bit differently. Mm. One of the things that I kind of enjoyed most about it were what they called the modifiers. There's different things that you find along the way through the game, or you can buy from the game shop that allow you to kind of customize your loadout. It's nothing major, but you've only got the capacity to install a certain number, up to a certain capacity. So it's then you kind of mixing and matching what modifiers are going to suit your gameplay. There are some that have negative effects, but then boost your capacity as a result. So you can kind of, you know, buff and debuff your gameplay a little bit as well. I like that sort of customizability. But then, yeah, beyond that, it's very Metroidvania-like. You go around, you explore the world, you backtrack, you'll revisit different locations. The game is hard as balls, so you'll get your ass kicked, and then you'll have to retrace your steps the whole way to get back to that same boss again to get your ass kicked for a 15th time. But I really, really enjoyed the game. Max, I think you've been on Betson's case to get a code. I think you've now got one. Have you tried it yet?
I have been playing it on PC. I played it for a little while. I played essentially like the opening portion. It's cool. I'll end up playing more, but something else is just consuming my time at the moment. So I'm kind of tunnel visioned on that at the moment.
One thing that I appreciated, and I tried it once I finished the game, I kind of went back and tried it. In terms of some accessibility stuff, and again, I said it's a pretty hard game. They've got this, the boss gets, if you lose to the boss and you've toggled on the option, I can't for the life of me remember what it's called, but essentially every time you die to the boss gets a little bit weaker. You don't get stronger. There's nothing, but like it shaves, I don't know, let's say 10% of its health off or whatever it happens to be. Just makes it that little bit, and that will continue to stack with repeated deaths. I'm sure there's some sort of cap. You're not going to be able to just spam, you know, go in there, just throw your life away so it's a one-hit kill somewhere down the line. But there's that, and there's like an additional pip of health that actually regenerates if you stay grounded, not in one spot, but just remain grounded for, I think it's 3 or 5 seconds. That restores as well. So if in some of the game's particularly difficult platforming segments later on in the game, which feel very much ripped out of something like Ori, if you give it a crack and it's lots of elaborate things, you double jump here, then you hit this, which then replenishes your jump. So then you boost again, like, and you're chaining a whole bunch of these moves together and one mistake and that's it, done. It's all right to have that option, that menu option ticked, because then if you fail, just stand still, wait those 3 to 5 seconds, pip, that health comes back, and it's like nothing ever happened again. So for those who maybe platforming is not their greatest strength, you've got that option as well. There's a few small, they're not major overhauls. It's not breaking the game. It's not like how, and I'm referring to like the HD 2D collections of Dragon Quest, for example, where they have the Dracky Quest thing, and all of a sudden you can't die. The bosses get super, like, it's not that level of extreme.
Would it be similar
but it's just enough that kind of maybe just makes it that hint more accessible for those who need it.
Would it be similar to how like Celeste was handled? So like, we know,
remind me, it's been a while now.
So Celeste had like essentially an easy mode, and although it didn't, you know, it didn't make you, from memory, like entirely invincible, like you could,
there were still fail states.
Yeah, there were still fail states, but it was like substantially simpler from memory.
Yeah. Look, I think it's probably a similar sort of thing, because my recollection of Celeste, with some of the modes they had, it didn't make the actual challenge you had to overcome easier.
Yeah.
It just meant that
some of those
you
little barriers
have to retrace
brutal,
a million
yeah.
steps backwards if but you failed.
Celeste's assist mode gave you invincibility, infinite stamina, and extra air dashes.
That's right.
And it would reduce the game speed down to 50%.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's definitely not that extreme then.
Okay. Well, that was way more extreme than I remembered.
So they
had something similar in, what was that, Prince of Persia? Was it the Prince of Persia roguelike? Where you created like ghost copies of yourself. Yeah. What was that? They had an assist mode where you could skip difficult platforming sections, where it would just show you how, it would just do it for you essentially.
Oh. Yeah, right. No, this Mio's definitely not to that sort of level. Yeah. It's more, you still need to complete this thing, but we'll give you some levers that you can pull that mean that you're not going to have to retrace your steps all the way back to the start if you take a hit and like if you fail it or, you know, this and that.
So they kind of like checkpoint it?
It's not a checkpoint. No, it's not like you, like you've got, you know, it depends on, I guess, how many pips of health you've accumulated throughout your thing. But say you've got multiple. If you try to chain all these moves and fail and hit some thorns or whatever it is and you die, it'll just bring you back to the right before that jump, which is what would normally be the case even in the normal difficulty without any of the accessibility options ticked. It's just that you can then stand there for a few seconds and that one bonus pip of health will replenish.
So you essentially have infinite retries because you can just stand there. Yeah.
If you just wait for a few seconds, boom, it's back, give it a go. Yeah. So the three options, I just quickly Googled what the names were. Yeah. So the difficulty one for the bosses was they called it eroded bosses. So the boss's health will gradually erode with every death. There's ground healing that I just mentioned. And the third one is pacifist, which is just any standard goon enemy you see out in the world. They won't attack you unless you attack them.
Okay.
So you can just wander straight past if you want.
Yeah, that is definitely like the full, pretty much the full range. Like,
yeah. That said, yeah. I never found, when it comes to the pacifist one, I never found the normal enemies of the world super difficult.
Mm.
I thought it was actually a pretty reasonable balance, but then when I got to the bosses, they just railed me for a while. To give people a very graphic representation.
So on the pacifist run, are the bosses easier, or is it just the goons?
No, that's just the normal stock standard enemies. Oh, so you cool. just
I like that.
You can just run straight past them if you want.
Yeah.
So if you did find yourself clowned out by that boss and you wanted to get back, quickly turn on pacifist, run past all those enemies on the way, so you can return to the boss with full health if you want. Mm. Take on the boss.
Because that was
turn off pacifist afterwards if you want. You can switch in and out as you're playing. It's not now we need to restore this checkpoint. There's none of those. You can switch it on and off at any point.
Because probably one of the most frustrating things about Hollow Knight for me was you'd go real super deep and you'd die and then you'd pull back to whatever the last bench you sat at and like
that's a mile away.
Yeah, then having to hike back to just even get your what are they called in that game? Like the souls, I guess, for lack of a term.
The currency and stuff.
Yeah. But I grant that I know that's such a stamina, that is such a standard for these genres of games. It's not to be, but.
Oh, Metroidvanias aren't necessarily absolutely renowned for their brutal difficulty.
I mean, these days, though, it's becoming more and more frequent. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like people wanting to drop dashes of Hollow Knight in there amongst whatever else it is that they're doing, so.
Hmm.
But it's a good game. It's definitely well worth picking up. I was happy to see when the reviews came out that I wasn't the only one singing its praises. I think it's been received really, really well. Did anyone? No one. Max, did you?
I was very happy with how well it was received. I
was
going to
say, you drafted it in the end, didn't you?
80s.
Oh, you're welcome. I did my bit to bump you up then. Oh, that's right. Of course you picked it up because that's when I blurted out like, oh, I'm playing that game. Yeah, sitting on an 83, so that's a pretty solid start.
Excellent. Well, we've got more to talk about our draft in our news because everything was anchoring on some bits of information, and it could still be something.
You shut your mouth.
He's got one out of two. One out of two, you can put it in the bag. That's fine.
But we'll wait.
But the other one would be fascinating.
It's coming.
I'm glad you're digging it, Padge, and that's good because it's. It's nice to have a game that, you know, just genuinely fuck give a shit about and just kind of like just love it.
Yeah. And then like I'm playing other things. You referenced potentially as we started recording and then I don't know how the segue into the actual show is going to look
context,
in the end if you read it.
The bullshit I said at the start. So Padge talked about it last week, something that he's been doing with his other shows was to talk about the different sports
the
stuff earlier, the Hoops Crew. There's a little joke within your community over there about you and Ninja Turtles, and you discussed in previous episodes that you've been playing that roguelike TMNT game,
Splinter Fate.
And you just happened to be playing it, and I think I saw you share it on Twitter or something, and I was like, oh shit, actually he's still alive, I'll go check it out. I'm just mostly curious to see what the show is. And I go in, and what do I see? You playing TMNT. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. It's not footy related at all. And then you're talking about trophies.
Yeah.
So then I was quite confused. Because that's what you do.
So
here.
Like the whole the whole thing, like there was, I think I mentioned it last week maybe. There was a very drunken Brownlow night stream at the end of last year, and as the super chats rolled in, I promised everyone that I'd give them a Ninja Turtles stream, like actually playing Ninja Turtles game. And so that's what it was last week. And then they enjoyed it. And we're going to continue to do these game night streams. So what actually had occurred is we'd gone from one show to another back to back. So we had a footy stream beforehand, talking about a whole range of different footy topics. And then that one ended. 5 minutes later, I was into the game night. Ninja Turtles stream. So actually, I'm kind of done with Ninja Turtles now. I'm going to be doing The Last of Us Part 1 with them going forward, the request came in Part 1.
Because nothing says the Geelong Cats like The Last of Us.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely nothing's. We're not going footy related. It's just...
but you know what I mean? It's just an interesting collision of fan bases, I guess.
It's been good because, and you know, going back to the point of conversation before about, you know, the different groups of people that you meet and the networks and those sorts of things, I've become very quickly very attached to the community that we've built. from, you know, the commentary going on in the Discord to the regular face who always pop into the streams. And the, I mean, the footy thing, it's seasonal, right? Like that's why you've got me right now, is that there was a big gap in my scheduling and whatnot. And so I was sweet to able to kind of bounce over, but was really kind of missing a lot of that, chatter and just really enjoyed the conversation along the way. So it became a case of how about we, just run some game streaming once a week. Mm. I was already in what is dubbed the Paul James Show. Very self-absorbent. I didn't do that. I didn't name it after myself, but I embraced it.
Yeah. The Paul James Show, starring Paul James.
Paul James. Like, we go through a whole bunch of footy stuff, and then just before I got to Q&A at the end, we had the game of the show, and I would take a few minutes and show off some game, the latest trailer for Fable or whatever it might happen to be. Just to try and bring in my interest there, and that kind of built over time, and there's a whole, like, the community really gets around it and chats and shares and talks about the games they're playing and whatnot, and so got a bit of an intersection going, and bit by bit, that was only the second game night stream the other night that we've ever done, but that'll keep going all year. I'll do my Thursday night, whatever night it ends up being, previews, like round previews for the Paul James Show, and that'll bounce straight into a game night thing afterwards.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because, like, as you said, there's the crossover community is interesting because wrestling and gaming is from a Venn diagram is near a full circle. Really, most people that are into wrestling culture, into gaming culture, sports is I don't think it's as close, but if you seem to have caught, like, that good intersection.
I mean, look, no, there's for our normal numbers, there's a massive drop off. We're probably I'm retaining 20% of the audience. But we don't mind because it's all just community and chatting and
it's all engagement, those sorts of things. Engagement,
you know, if it was all dollars and cents and those sort of things, then we probably wouldn't do it because it probably algorithmically hurts a little bit. But we when it comes to our dollars and cents, we get that from sponsors, we get that from Patreon. YouTube still does pretty well for us, and I mean, I've been putting out daily videos for the last 10 days or thereabouts, previewing every player's season, and that's going to continue on for another 30 odd days.
Kick off soon, isn't it?
Yeah, we're a few weeks away. So there's going to be lots and lots of stuff. And so the 1 hour to an hour and a half long stream at the end of the day isn't going to derail how YouTube finds us. So we're just having a bit of fun with it. And at different points, there'll be footy related games, I'm sure.
Footy Bash coming out this year,
footy
maybe?
Footy Bash is meant to be out this year. And the other one, that because you decided not to go to PAX last year.
I went to my other community.
I'm gonna go to the wrestling.
There was Pro Jank Footy that was there.
Oh yeah,
which has actually got, like, it's a very, very similar in some ways with a whole bunch of roguelike elements. So I'll probably stream those when the time comes as well. One's actually coming to console.
Oh, dope! Love it.
Yeah. And the other game I'm playing is embargoed, so I can't talk about it.
Oh.
Well, and I'm not going to make the mistake that I did last time.
trying to think of a segue between talking about community and having a team of people. Hey, Max, you're playing still more Octopath.
I am.
It's big team.
Big team. Big community. Yeah, my team's so big, my town is now level 5.
Whoa, I assume that's good.
I hope it's at the end. This whole town building shenanigans is frustrating me. So one thing I wish that they did, and because of the way this is set up is like a 2.5D game, you can't see through the buildings when you need to walk behind them in town. And at the very start, when you're progressing and building out your town, you just have shit built everywhere. And now there's points where I struggle to get through my town to try and get to all the bits and pieces because you've got a limited space when you're just starting out to build all your shit.
It goes up to level 8, by the way.
Oh, of course it does.
I thought he nailed it. I thought I was square in the shin pads.
I thought I was so close. So I've now, like, the it's kind of tiered. There seems to be like 3 to 4 tiers of where you can build. And as you progress and level up your town, you can kind of build further and further up. So now that I've got a few levels, I've destroyed everyone's houses and moved them all. So there's now like a housing block over here and all my shops are over there and I've got to put everything where they need to be so I don't have to dick around in trouble. I'm now thoroughly in what I assume is the mid game. I'm on like chapter 5 of the second lot of quests that you... The Master of All. I now have my own ship that I kind of went for a while sailing, found some areas that I just definitely should not be. Because as you enter a new area, it's like, hey, this is the recommended level. I'm like, cool, that's 60. I'll see what I can steal real quick and then like flee. the story's still cool.
You're almost halfway then. If you're working your way through Master of All,
yeah,
you're almost halfway.
So my game time's like atrociously out of whack. The PlayStation claims that I've been playing it for about 40 hours, but my save file's sitting at 24 hours.
Oh, interesting. So must count menu time where the game does not.
Yeah.
The only thing, right?
And I think even my save game time's inflated because I walked away from it for about 45 minutes the other day.
Which one do you think's right? Do you think I'm
assuming my in-game save file's more accurate than the...
I'd be more inclined to think, given how long I clocked it at about 90 odd, and I finished most, but not all of the game. It was 92 hours or something like that when I finally was done.
Yeah, so my in-game time is between about 24 to 26.
Yeah, you're about halfway through the game. Almost halfway through the game. I reckon...
Are you using your save count or the PlayStation count patch?
Oh, both mine were pretty well in sync, so I don't know.
Yeah, mine are like 10 to 15 hours different. Like, mine's crazy different, so... I finally got a team together that I kind of like. Fairly synergistic. I finally worked out how the back and front system works correctly. Even though you can't use abilities from the back line, but there's abilities that function differently if you've moved from the back to the front. So, you know, juggling all of those and how it works is interesting. I know I haven't finished this yet, but I think this is my favorite of the series.
Mm. Nice.
It seems to be telling a much darker, more adult story than what the other two have. And for that reason alone, I've found the story to be way more compelling than the previous stories. It's also, I'm enjoying the fact that you're following the antagonist's stories and the other people's stories, as opposed to in 1 and 2, where you're following each individual character's story and how they progress. You kind of just have your main character that you create at the start, and you recruit people that have been... Like, most of the faces that you recruit are from previous titles. So they're not unknown, for the most part, they're not unknowns. But yeah, it's still such a great game.
My only thing is, does the reason you like that setup better is because that makes it more like any other RPG? Because isn't that kind of thing about Octopath, was that you're experiencing each of these individual stories of these eight characters?
The story just seems to flow easier.
Yeah,
following
it's a flow thing. Yeah.
The story seems much more, I wouldn't say linear, but it's more cohesive than what it is going, I'm going to do 3 stories over here about this character, and then I'm going to do 3 stories over here about this character, and then I'm going to do like 1 over here, and this character is not very compelling to me, so I'm not going to use that character, and then I'm going to go back over here, and it does flow way better doing it this way than it does the previous 2 titles, and I think that's why it's just a notch above the other ones, in my opinion.
Yeah, when you can go and bounce off and do chapter 3 for this character, and then all of a sudden you have to do chapter 4 for that other character, and you potentially don't return to the person you just did chapter 3 for a dozen hours, because it creates a bit of a disconnect. Mm. Whereas at least in this case, like at the beginning of the game, there's 3 pathways you can follow. That's far smaller and more contained. And then those 3 stories, once you complete them, they bottleneck into the Master of All chapter that Max is on now, and that is one story thread around one villain, you and your partner. So like that one's in particular really cohesive because the story just flows when you finish that chapter, assuming you don't go off and do optional stuff. Then the next chapter just follows up exactly where you left off, and it just keeps rolling.
Okay. Yeah. Other than that, better. Yeah, it does. The delivery is better from a story perspective.
I would completely agree. Just for, like, even just thinking about it from logically, right? Yeah, like a fragmented story will definitely be a lot worse than a structured, cohesive narrative. But what I mean by that is because that being one of the biggest selling features of the whole idea of the Octopath Traveler, yeah. Octo, you know, it just kind of is it then just readjusting what they do to be more in line with other RPGs, but in turn allowing them to demonstrate something different and better in their storytelling, but taking advantage of the characters you've known previously.
Yeah, pretty much, essentially. Yeah. The only other thing that I've really touched this week is I foolishly downloaded the demo for Donkey Kong Bonanza, and now I really want to purchase that game.
It's so good.
Me and Hadley were playing it, and it's like, your time is up. I'm like, what the fuck you mean my time's up? I swear I just started this thing.
And he looks at the clock and like, holy shit, that's been 10 hours.
No, you get 30 minutes. That's how long they give you, and that is enough to hook you.
So, all right, well, like, I know it's not a PlayStation game, but I looked at Bonanza, and I'm like, I don't get it.
It's basically what if Donkey Kong was Red Faction and everything's destroyable. It's Donkey Kong Bad Company 2.
He just bashes his way through the world. So, like, you've got... I mean, did you play... It's almost like, you're a bit tighter with Nintendo at the time. Did you play Mario Odyssey?
Yeah.
So, like, imagine Odyssey and you've got all of these moons in that case that were scattered all across this world and you could go and approach them in any way you wanted. Same sort of thing here with Bonanza, except that there's also a whole lot of these bananas that are just buried within the earth somewhere. And so you've got these ones that might like that are above ground that might be tied to some little main mission or you just stumble upon them. And then there's others where Donkey Kong's just a badass and he starts digging down and smashing into the dirt and you've just cracked into another Banandium gem. I'm like, great, there's another one.
Sweet.
You just keep building it. Yeah. Like it's the verticality, I guess, of it as well.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's really, really cool.
It's Spelunky Kong.
Spelunk. Fuck. That. Because, like, I could see where you were going with, like, Red Faction and Bad Company. I'm like, all right. But Spelunky Kong. I fucking get it.
It's Spelunky Kong.
I get it.
And, like, you can just, you know, digging through the turf, you can just dig your way through the turf and then just fall straight through into oblivion.
That's awesome.
Like, it's. The whole thing's completely destructible to the point where you could leave yourself with nothing left if you wanted to.
So what is that what got you the hook, Max? Just breaking shit?
No, what got me... So I, for the last 2 weeks, my kids are obsessed with watching videos on it on YouTube.
Mm.
Like that. And it just looks fun. Watching people do like... it's like the trick maneuvers where you ride on the rock that you've pulled up off out of the ground, then you skateboard on the rock, and then you jump in the air. You throw the rock in front of you, you grab it again, you put it back underneath yourself, you use it to jump off again, and you just fly through the air by repeatedly throwing, grabbing the rock, jumping off it.
Yeah, apparently there's a way to go from like there's I think it's 14 in the main like the full game. Mm. There's like 14 different layers that you work through on your way down to the core of the earth. But there's apparently a way to chain maneuvers just like that one to get straight from the very first layer at the top all the way to the end. Like you can Breath of the Wild this shit and just
it's well it's you can finish Super Mario Odyssey without getting Cappy.
Okay, yeah, of course you can.
Like the things that people find and work out is just it's like shell jumping in the original Mario Brothers. It's just that tech kind of. I love that kind of stuff in games. But Nintendo got a Nintendo and I refuse to pay $125 for a game. It's so fucking expensive. And they never go on sale.
Have you checked?
Now I'm trying to think. Yeah. Did I say, yeah. Well, especially now that it was like, you know, Game of the Year nominated, like there's no chance they're ever going to like cull it down.
$89 at Kmart.
Our Kmart doesn't sell games.
You buy games from Kmart?
Can't buy games from Kmart.
It says Kmart and more. Hang on, here we go. Kmart.com.au takes me to Donkey Kong Bonanza for Switch 2.
Wow.
Oh, but then it says, hang on.
Our local Kmart don't sell it.
Officeworks. It's Officeworks because it says Kmart and then Marketplace sold by Officeworks.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Because, yeah, our Kmart's got rid of games like years ago.
Mute in the chat asks, Kmart's still around? Yeah, so weirdly enough, our Kmart is in the US, like your Target blew up and Targets are everywhere. Ours are less, and actually the company here in Australia that owns Kmart owns Target, and there are more Kmarts than anything. Like, apparently Kmart's dead as fuck in the US, but here it's booming.
Kmart's just gobbled up all the Targets.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It's our like a budget shop, I guess, but it kind of has everything. It's not quite a Walmart because it doesn't have the extent of the range, but yeah, the Kmart's here go absolutely off. All right, well, I'm gonna take the floor for a second, and I'm gonna talk about some of the games that I've been playing. Look, I've been playing Ark Raiders. Not gonna touch upon that anymore. I'm still enjoying it. The game, the loop is fine. I love jumping in and just being like, all right, well, I need some biometric scanners. I'm just gonna rush this one map, knowing that I'm just gonna go to this one place where there's a high chance it's gonna drop. Simple as that.
The hospital.
Yep. The game is starting to frustrate me in that I just want to get to the place because it keeps throwing me in every other fucking direction. And then I run the X, hundreds of meters to get there, and I get fucking murdered along the way. Like, not by, sometimes by arcs, sometimes by people. It's like, oh, I need to get to this building. Cool. And there just happens to be a Bastion or a Rocketeer there. I'm like, fuck off, man. Just let me go in and get my toaster and get the fuck out. That's all I want. That's it. That's all I need.
Yeah, I'm up to the point where I'm like, "Ooh, Bastion, I'm a wreck his shop."
Well,
because I need his stuff.
See, this is the thing where I'm at right now, because I'm in the process of trying to level up all the benches, right? Because at this moment, I don't feel that I'm capable of taking on even something like a Rocketeer. Like, it has to be Wasps and even Hornets, kind of, like, and the roly shitty ones and the little spider fucks. Like, they seem tolerable, but it's because I've not hit the point where I can get rarer weapons. I'm still running common weapons. And I need to find that jumping point to get to it.
Do night raids on Stella Montes.
Yeah.
And just go in naked. Don't take anything. Don't even select free loadout. Go in completely naked so you still have a prison pocket.
Yeah.
And just loot. Because it's night raid, everything's elevated. I was walking out with like 4 to 5 blueprints a run.
Ooh.
Like, it's ridiculous. And most people in Salamontas, not dickheads, and won't kill you.
Because they're all there for the same reason you are, which is where he is loot shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's the trick. I'll give that a bell. Because that's the hurdle that I'm facing at the moment. Is I'm like, I want to go do these things, and because especially some of the upgrades need the Bastion, whatever dingusy things. But I just, for the life of me, can't seem to be in a position where I'm strong enough. And on top of that, I think playing in a squad would definitely help as well, but it's just me most of the time. Cause I just kind of come in, do a couple rounds, and then I bounce. So the idea of even though I'd love to do another run you and I did,
just shoot me a message if I'm free, I'll get on.
Oh yeah, yeah. But normally I'm just like, yeah, I'm just gonna do 2 rounds and then scoot. But yeah, like I'm absolutely down for a longer session. But the other thing that I've been playing, and it did make me laugh because it was mentioned in the chat earlier. After last week, I talked about it a little bit, and I sort of thought more about it after the show. Is right now, there is nothing that's getting me excited in games. I can't find what that next one for me is. And we mentioned when we were looking ahead, I'm like, I think the next big thing, the next thing that's remotely interesting to me is Resi. And Resi's not till, a month from now.
A month? Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck. And I had, I jumped back into the old Arkham City. I was like, maybe that's what I'm looking for. I tried a couple of different things and nothing was really landing. And obviously, Padge, with you on here, we've been talking a lot more about our many year old plan of Yakuza Like a Podcast. And knowing that we're about to hit the end of seasonal Padge, I was like, okay, well, what's something that we can do in that interim to keep you in the conversation within the show or within the audience, the tens of people that check this shit out. Like, what's something else we can do? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to finally do it. I'm going to download Yakuza Kiwami, and I'm going to jump in and give it a bell. And I am 4 chapters deep at the moment out of 13, I think it is. So yeah, like 4-ish hours in, 4-ish, 5-ish hours. I'm enjoying it, which is good. I expected I would. I'm not going to go too deep because obviously we're going to, down the line, have our big time chats. That's the whole point. But in a lot of ways, and I say this knowing full well that, like, you know, the Yakuza and Mafia and the Mafia are similar, like, criminal organizations. That's the point.
Yep.
But to me, in a lot of ways, it feels like the Japanese take of the Mafia games. Like, as of right now, in the 4 chapters that I've played, we haven't hit that silly exuberance that you see in, like, Like a Dragon.
In some of the trailers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that must be a pivot that's come later in the series. Because with Kiwami being essentially a remake of Yakuza 1, like the original, it looks fantastic, it plays fantastic, but it does have moments where those little bits of jank, right? Where there's, like, because it's clearly a remaster of an older game, and it does feel that it is the origin, because it is, of what Yakuza is going to become. Because, like, you know, jumping into Yakuza Like a Dragon, this is 7 games later, right? So there's going to be a whole lot of growth and change within how it's delivered. So right now it is very, it's grounded in a way. The premise is that you play, I mean, I'm going to get this right, you play Kazuma Kiryu, K-I-R-Y-U.
Yep.
So it's a character that you sort of see sprinkled a little bit later on, which is lovely. But this is where he is, the original guy that you mess about with. So what's the Ichiban? Ichiban's the guy you're playing Like a Dragon. So he's not in the play at the moment. You are like a lieutenant in the Dojima family, and there's a chick that you're into, and you got a mate who's your kind of, you know, dude you work the in the Yakuza with. Push comes to shove, literally, and while you're not there, your mate, in order to allegedly protect another individual, which is the girl that you're into, he takes out the head of the clan. And, you know, Kazuma being the dude that he is, he's like, get the fuck out, I'll take the hit for it. So then he goes to prison for 10 years for killing the head of the clan. Interestingly, though, he's not excommunicated from the Yakuza. He's just instead demoted. So that brings some intrigue of, like, okay, why weren't you kicked out? If you've killed this level ranking guy, you should be fucking out of it. You shouldn't be alive.
Is the guy who came in still likes him?
I guess. Right? Like, you know, it's interesting to see where that's going, right? Because, like, knowing that you're not the one, that you didn't do it, right? You didn't kill the guy. You just took the fall. So, like, do they know? Because there's at no point is there any giveaway that they know that you didn't do it. Everyone just assumes you fucking did it. Because you're room, you're holding the gun, the body's in front of you, it's pretty clear.
How many, like, aha moments have you had? Because obviously when we played Like a Dragon, there's a lot of flashbacks to these games. Or did you not get that far? I don't remember if you got that far.
Oh, I put like 20-something hours into Like a Dragon. I got up to the mall and then I got distracted and sort of wandered off. But the faces are familiar, but I don't remember. I'm not like, oh, that moment in Like a Dragon, because I feel like I played Like a Dragon years ago, which I think I did. But yeah, it's certainly like, oh, that guy. Oh, like, so it's the new face, like seeing old faces in a new way is cool. Even the guy that you play in Pirate Yakuza, like, he plays a role in the first game as well. He's another individual.
Goro Majima or something?
Yeah, Majima, yeah. Oh, there you go, in the chat. His interesting gimmick in the game is he's kind of like your level up guy. He kind of said, like, there's a moment early on where he's like, I'm going to be around, and I'm just going to, ostensibly, I'm just going to come in and jack your shit, right? You never know when it's going to happen. I'm just going to rock up and kick the shit out of you. And if you win, you get XP points. And if you don't, fuck you. So yeah, he just rock. He's like little moments of little boss fights. He just rocks up and's like, "Yo, dude!" And you're like, "Ah, fuck." And so the game tells you like you've got to be ready, like have health packs and shit, like because he's just gonna rock up.
Fuck.
And it's kind of fun. Like it's not super gnarly. Like I said, the couple times, like the first time you meet him, he kicks the piss out of you, but that's intentional. Because then you go to prison and it's been 10 years. So the idea is that because you've been in prison for so long, your skills have lessened. So it's a great way to get around, like, you know, when you start a game and you're all super jacked up and then they take it all away from you and then you've got to rebuild.
We take all Kratos' powers away to bring him back to ground again.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that part is really interesting. So it's set up the idea of like, well, you know what you're doing. You've just got to get those idiosyncrasies back, get those, you know, special moves and whatnot. Exploring the world is near identical to everything else I've seen in the other Yakuza games. You know, there's that little bit of that free roam feel, but you're just running around various streets of Japan. You get jacked by random dudes in the street, and then you have a fun kicking the crap out of them. There's the beginnings of the silliness, and like if there's any just random debris around, you can pretty much pick it up and use it as a weapon. Like that's really fun. I don't have any major emotional connections to the characters yet. I like the story because it does feel like, you know, a sort of a Japanese mafia movie in the same way that I enjoyed the mafia games because they just felt like cool mafia movies.
It's a mafia movie.
Yeah, it's a mafia movie. It's the best kind. Double mafia. And I come to, okay, cool. I just want to see where this goes. And look, admittedly, part of me is enjoying the fact that I am stepping into a type of experience, whether it be like mostly thematically, that I don't normally jump into, because as Mute asks in the chat, are you dubbed or subbed? But this modern version, the remake of Kiwami, it doesn't have dubbed options, so it is Japanese voice acting with subtitles, which is something I would never pick. Because
I would be exactly the same. I would never do that. Right.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I guess I'm gonna get a pretty
Max just shaking his head
interesting experience. Because someone that has
take your anime, you dork.
What?
Look, it depends. So if I'm really interested in a game, I will play it subbed, not dubbed, because I'm more likely to give it more focus and not look away. Whereas if they're English voices during dialogue heavy bits, I'll look away because I'm still listening.
Get the phone out and you're just listening, yeah.
Because I'm still listening. Whereas if I have to read it, I'm sitting there engaged and I'm more likely to retain that information. So,
and that is the exact same reason, like you are bang on why I would normally pick dub, right? Mm. Because I can draw my attention elsewhere. But I'm very much an audio processor, right? Like I said, I love conversation. I like listening to things. That's how I take in my information, so I can still look away and take in what's going on. Not 100%, obviously, because the visual indicators and everything is all part of that media. But it's then making me go, okay, well, I have to be aware that I need to give this my full attention. So if it's the end of the day and my ADHD is ADHD and it's just been a real brain heavy day, I'm like, there is no way I'm gonna be able to sit here and
process
like the trying to wrap my head around the dialogue while reading, because as Phoebe pointed out, there's a lot of grunting in the delivery, because there's a whole lot of that real, you know, that deep anime dude gruff voice, you know, the one.
Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, and it's a lot of that, but just different dudes. So yeah, so I do have to be very selective on when I play it and want it to give it my full attention. But when I do give it my attention, it's a blast. I'm really keen, Padge, when you have a gap or a little bit of time where you could jump into it.
Yeah, so I've already identified that after my big, mysterious, embargoed game, that's next. Yeah. Because I do look at Feb and I go, okay, like there's a few cool games in here. Resi's obviously the big one for a lot of people at the end of the month. I've only been a Resi convert in the last 7 or 8 years. And even then, Like I played seven. I had to play seven because I got given that for review. That broke the back of the whole thing. I played two. I played three. Enjoyed all of them. Got started on Village, but then got distracted by something else, whatever that was. And then since then,
oh yeah, because
that's come along. Max, four remake has come along, and I haven't played them.
There were two games in tandem. I picked Village, and you picked something else. What was it?
I don't know. I mean, I played Village.
Yeah, but like I remember in terms of hitting review beats. We went switchies.
Let's have a look.
Yeah, I couldn't possibly tell you what it was, but really. I mean, I guess I could go look at my trophies. That'll
and it's also really unrelated. It's me focusing on the wrong part.
Well, no, but yeah, like it kind of pulled me away, and so then I haven't played Resi 4 Remake since. Like it's gotten away from me a little bit.
Yeah.
So not that I need to play 4 to play Requiem, but I would like to have played 8 before I played Requiem. So. I've got to fix a few things before I jump in. So that one won't end up happening day and date for me because I just, I don't know, OCD, whatever it is.
Yeah, so because like, so
I'll diagnose myself.
Because I've contemplated doing the same thing with 9. I was like, maybe I'd run 8 again. So I never really played it the once for review, and I enjoyed it. And I did go to play it again in VR, and I got up to the werewolves in the house, and then I saw something lurched, and I nearly, all my insides almost became outsides.
As Returnal well as, released Returnal released the week before.
There you go, that's the one.
And Nier Replicant was the week before that, and I was just consumed by those two games.
And the other, yeah. So Returnal was one, and then Ratchet and Clank came after, and I had that for like there was the review for that.
Because I think we got early, Village really early, so I think we got Village around the same time as Returnal, and I'm like, okay, I'll take this one.
Yeah,
because I think I did Village after Returnal.
That makes sense. But yeah, so if you've got a gap in your time, as it seems you may have, like, and with Yakuza Kiwami 3 right around the corner, it wouldn't be a bad idea for us to sort of either hit it, get in that momentum, and even then, yeah, start working on the show and sync it up a little bit as the little side.
Well, yeah, I mean, Knockout 1, Knockout 2, then 3 comes out, and you're in a good place.
Yeah. And yeah, and then because there will be some scattered games in between, it'll allow us to sort of, you know, not get too... drained in the
I mean, my understanding is they're still not super long games. I think we were looking at the lengths last week, and I think the first two were both about 18 hours or so each. So,
yeah, and that seems to be lining up with where I'm at. So, because they are, the reason I keep referring to them very similar to like the original Mafia, or at least probably more somewhere in between Mafia 1 and Mafia 2, in that it is the story is incredibly linear. You really feel like it's just pushing you forward. Then you have those little open world moments where you just get to run from one building to another through these streets. It's kind of like Mafia 2, where there's not a whole lot to do in the world, but it just kind of gives you a bit more sense of being in it if you have to travel from one place to another and stop off at a service station and grab some food to help your health and whatever. You know, so it does feel very much like those two games. But yeah, I won't share too much more about it, knowing that it will be something that we'll be doing at a later date, and then both you and I can dive deep into it.
I'll catch up nice and soon.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. But all right, speaking of catching up, let's get into the section where we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Max, what's the top story?
We found out that Max is still in the draft running this year.
Oh, yeah.
So Fable and Forza Horizon 6 coming to PlayStation 5. As Xbox Game Studio confirms, Fable is coming autumn 2026, assuming no delays. Forza Horizon 6 will be coming in May 2026 for Xbox and PC, but PS5 later this year. So hopefully we're looking at the 4 months that Indiana Jones got, and we'll be playing it by Halloween. Hopefully earlier.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's a pretty reasonable one.
Yeah. The other two games that were announced at the showcase that are also coming to PlayStation, Beast of Reincarnation, the Game Freak game is also coming to PlayStation day and date by the look of it.
They announced it as multi-platform. It was weird the way they spoke about it during the showcase. Like, go to our website, find out other platforms. Like, we know the other platforms.
And you go to the website, it's like, oh, everyone else.
Go play Pokemon, nerds.
And Kiln. Who was excited by Kiln? I thought it was cool. It was a let's make pottery, and then we're gonna. It's a four versus four brawler.
Double fine one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I
always make them. They almost make the most bizarre games, but most like they're always fun.
It's a 2-week game jam idea, and it's become something.
So the only trailer that I watched was the Fable one. I haven't watched anything else from the direct yet, but I had heard what it appeared. Because mostly because I wanted to look at Fable and be like, okay, is Max going to be fucked? Like, is this going to be delayed into the new year? It looks
I think
awesome.
The fate of Fable is so heavily tied to GTA.
Well, that's the thing, right? So Fable is
It could be an ugly double whammy for me where he gets Fable and I lose GTA.
Mm. Yeah, like that was kind of what I was thinking. Like, is it something that's going to drop?
Because when's GTA announced for? Was it
supposedly November?
Yeah, so I mean, autumn, September to November. If it drops in September, it's going to be out of the way of GTA enough. I think it was the 17th of November, right?
But fall normally means October. Right? Yeah,
I mean,
setting aside the draft part of it, like Xbox does have a real challenge. Like, they're going to now launch the Forza support sometime in that window.
Mm-hmm.
Halo is going to come out somewhere in that window, and I'm sure they would have loved to have gotten as close as they could to the original anniversary, but that is GTA week, so they're going to have to bail and avoid that surely. Gears, they put up on socials at the beginning of the at the very beginning of the year, they dropped a thing and then they go, here it is, 2026. Like, they're trying to tell us that all the big four are coming this year, and I just feel like one's got to drop. And the one bit of negative feedback that I've heard about Fable was that performance wise it wasn't perfect, and if they get to closer to launch and they go, okay, GTA hasn't budged, we've got all these other games, do we just play it safe? And again, sorry, like, Max, I'm not trying to do it to shit stir through the draft lens, like, purely, you know, if I'm trying to project for Xbox, okay, if we are less than perfect and GTA comes along, we could kill this brand forever if we don't do it properly. So I wonder if they don't delay.
My thinking was, if anything would get pushed, it would be Forza, knowing that it came out on PlayStation, 4 years after Xbox last time and still sold gangbusters. They're like, what's an extra couple of months?
They'll want it for Christmas though.
Mm.
And to be fair, like that is an easy one. I don't think they're going to make that. They're going to make their decision still based on their Xbox community.
I think they've sold enough time. Like, I think if they aim for like a late September release, that's still a month and a half away from GTA.
And don't forget, they've still got to factor in Call of Duty as well, which is now their baby also.
Yeah, but
GTA.
Call of Duty avoids nothing, and it's currently further down in the news. It's at a 17-year low for sales. Yeah. It's done.
I don't think it's quite that. I think it's got a little bit more of a death rattle in it, but it is interesting to think about what Xbox is going to need to do. I don't think
come sooner than expected.
Yeah, I don't think
one of them's got to be sooner.
I don't think it's ironic may not be the right term, but there is this weird situation for the longest time. It felt like nothing has been coming for the Microsoft side of things. Nothing. And the second they start pivoting to, hey, everything's an Xbox, now all the games start hitting. So it's that weird balance where under their previous model, they would want to stagger this out for Game Pass reasons. And that is still true. They do need to consider Game Pass and how they lay these out over a year to ensure, you know, the longest potential customer retention. But now they know that there is a staggeringly, you know, equally large pool off to the side with PlayStation, and knowing that they've got to make all that money back. Because you talk about, I think we discussed it around some of the profit expectations for the Xbox division from Microsoft. And it's like reasonably absurd numbers. And the only way to do that, at least in the short term, before they completely like dismantle as a console manufacturer and become Sega or whatever, essentially, this could be their big last big swing to get you buy an Xbox. But at the same time, you don't have to. It's a really weird situation, I feel, for them to be in. Because as you said, Patch, there's like so many titles that need to come out and they need to hit. And there is an expectation on them to you don't want to send them out to die. Because let me think.
It's funny, you've done for years where we've all been Where are the games? Where are the games? Now that they're all coming, they're like, everyone's like, oh, there's too many games coming out at once.
Well, like, I just think I'm purely, as a consumer, I'm delighted.
Yeah.
Like, as a PlayStation fan, keen to play Halo on PlayStation. Absolutely. I adore Gears. If you told me it was still just coming exclusively to Xbox, I know it won't be, I'm sure. But if you told me it's exclusive to Xbox, I'll be going to my Xbox and I'll be playing it on that. Like, Gears is one of my absolute favorite franchises, full stop. Forza, I've fallen in love with since 5. Fable, I've loved since I played it back on the 360. All of their big hitters have just arrived all at the same time. And I just wonder if, like, they're not as a fan, delighted. No. As someone who tries to analyze this, I go, are you going to step on your own toes?
They've all had such vastly different development times, too, because, like, Fable's been in the works for the last, 10-ish years?
Yeah.
But I feel like
whereas
it's not the
Halo's
only time.
They're
at the point where they kind of have to release it because they need to start making money on that thing. Now, obviously, it's by Playground, and Playground are swimming in that Forza money. But
so maybe it was deliberate. They showed us footage that the frame rate was not quite perfect. They're like, see that? That's why we're delayed to 2027.
At some point, they've
got to
start
getting back in January
on that. Oh, speaking of things that look mint, how incredible does Forza look?
Oh.
It's absolutely ludicrous how good those games look. And it's in Japan. We can get our drift on. live out our Tokyo drift dreams.
Oh, those little Bow Wow days. I've dreamt of them. But yeah, I guess since... Because my other consideration was like, well, do they just do it? Do they just start, like, drop them as they happen?
Yes.
And then the last, yeah, well, that's that would have to be the play. Because the last time they did that, that was when they first transitioned into this cross-platform model with, was it Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Sea of Thieves, and Grounded. Now, granted, those games are on very different scales, but there was one clear winner in that four, and it was Sea of Thieves. Everything else kind of got forgotten. And
yes.
Granted, I don't have like a affection for those franchises like anyone else, but you know, that grew up on Halo or Gears. So having them all come out at once, I'm like, man. But I do wonder how
analysis wise, though, like it seems counterintuitive in some ways.
It does, and I'm very aware that it's me trying to process what is now the new way the industry is working. In the way that I have learned and grown on it, is the old way of doing things. So it's clashing with my understanding.
But I would also argue that no publisher out there, maybe save for Embracer Group and look at how well they've been going.
I didn't go well for them either, yeah.
No publishers going, let's just drop all our games at once.
Like, EA did it.
No point in history, even the current day. Yeah, and they killed Titanfall.
Yep.
At no point in history has a publisher gone, let's drop all these games at once, and it's worked.
No. Not at all. Yeah.
It doesn't. So, especially in the case of this one, like, everything hinges on this is the big four.
But it could also...
We're going to give you Halo, we're going to give you Forza, and here's, I don't know, Hellblade 3, which is pretty niche in comparison. Or, you know, Grounded 2 1.0 launch. Very niche in comparison. Even though it's
they're working on, I know it's very popular. They're working on what's that other open world survival game that they did with zombies?
State of Decay. Yeah,
got State of Decay 3 coming at some point as well, don't they?
I really enjoyed it too.
Clockwork Revolution's in along the way. Like, that'll be next year, but like, that is niche also in comparison. It's not like you're going two big hitters that are maybe a month or two apart, and then here's some small shit along the way. We're going, here's Gears, here's Halo, here's Forza, here's Fable. You just can't especially if it ends up being Fable. Like if you don't get this right with Fable and it gets destroyed by your own franchises or GTA, you potentially kill that franchise. Done.
I think the thing that Fable's got going for, I mean, I completely agree with you in the fact that if this does not launch well, Fable's done. Fable is so vastly different of a game to all of the other things that are coming out around that time that I think it will be okay. Like, it's not like releasing Titanfall and Battlefield at the same time. It's not like...
Two are the same, yeah.
It's not like they're dropping Halo and Gears of War at the same time. They're dropping what is essentially an open-world RPG with a bunch of racing and shooting games.
So what about competition from other peers, though? Not that I can honestly, I can't think of another big fantasy RPG that's in line to come out at that particular time. Blood of the Dawnwalker, maybe.
I mean, the only thing
Crimson Desert's coming out early this year.
Crimson Desert's already gone gold.
That's what I mean. Like that's going to be out in March. So that's I can't think of competition, but it might be out there and we just don't know it yet.
Yeah,
it could be a High Guard that just hey, it's going to come out in a month.
Look, but at the same time, it could also be a fire sale, right? They're like, let's just get this all fucking out. Because as you said, their only other comparative publisher is Embracer. And look, that's kind of what Xbox want to be, it seems. It's what they've been building towards. So if this is what they want to do with all the studios that they own, they're going to have stints where they'll be releasing multiple games in a year. And that's pretty insane. But what is also really insane, I'm just going to change topics because I feel like we would be on this forever if...
That's fine. We've got limited time anyway.
So. Exactly that. So, speaking of games that, you know, there's tons of games coming out all over the joint. How about games that aren't coming out at all? So, Ubisoft this week has announced a complete restructure on top of, and in turn, sorry, I should say, a bunch of cancellations. So, a series of unannounced games were cancelled, alongside the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake that has been in the ether for a little while. We've been discussing if it was meant to come out this month. But what they've done is they have categorized their IPs into five key development studio spaces or collectives, right? With each of them having their main focus, like one being the killer IP,
being Vantage Studios,
Vantage, that's the only one that has a name at the moment. So they're doing Assassin's Creed and Far Cry, and I think Division was in that list as well. It was Siege. So that, like, there's our bangers, and they mentioned that they want to start doing these more annual, which is concerning in and of itself. But then
I think it's just gonna be that they rotating. So it's like, Assassin's Creed, then Far Cry the next year, then Rainbow Six,
something,
Siege, something, whatever.
Like if I can get a new Far Cry
release something annually, they're not gonna release the IP annually.
Then there's a category that's all like open world experiences. So that's like your Wildlands.
So the Creative House 2 was basically the next tier of Avatar, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Creative House 2 was basically, that was your Tom Clancy house in a lot of ways. It was Division. It was Ghost Recon. It was Splinter Cell.
All right. I'm just going to pull it. Rather than sort of speculating, I'm just going to pull up.
Oh, no. Those two I know for a fact. But
you see their stock price dipped under $1 US?
Yeah. It's not going too well.
Now's the time to buy.
Yeah, if ever there was a time to buy into Ubisoft, now would be the time.
Gone down 95% since like 2018.
Yeah, here we go. So Creative House
bounce back.
So Creative House 1 is handling Far Cry, Assassin's Creed, Rainbow Six. Creative House 2 is the hub for Ubisoft's competitive and cooperative shooters, as you were saying, Padge, which includes The Division, Ghost Recon, and Splinter Cell. Splinter Cell seems interesting to have in competitive and cooperative shooters, but I think...
Spies versus Mercs.
For me, I think it's more of the stylistically. I think stylistically aligns a lot heavier with The Division and Ghost Recon. So if you were to make a Splinter Cell game, I reckon you would use the likes of Massive or even the, you know, that part of the engine, I guess, that they are using. Creative House 3, which is dedicated to live services. This includes a roster of, quote, select sharp live experiences like For Honor, The Crew, Riders Republic, Brawlhalla, and Skull and Bones, which is still apparently getting supported. My kid has...
Singaporean government's guaranteeing it.
Oh, absolutely. My kid has spent so much time with Riders Republic out of nowhere, like on and off over the last couple of years. He even used his Christmas PlayStation money for the season, for the next like three seasons worth of shit. Like he loves it. I didn't know there was a tail to it, but turns out there was. Creative House 4, which is focused on building immersive fantasy worlds and narrative driven IP. So this includes Anno, Might and Magic, Rayman, Prince of Persia, but not that one. And Beyond Good and Evil, apparently still. So interesting. Fantasy narrative driven is the game there, aim there, sorry. And then 5 is Creative House 5. They've been developed with casual and family friendly games like Just Dance, Idle Miner Tycoon, Hungry Shack, you know, their Hasbro licensed stuff. So
I don't mind this.
I really quite dig this. But
Paige, I've seen like internally developers I know have been upset, and I don't know. Jeez, who am I to sit here and say, hey, you developers, you don't understand. I don't actually see this having any great impact. If you are working on the Division 3 or the one definitive edition or what, like, or Splinter Cell, the remake, you're still going to keep working on those projects. Well, unless they, I think the other stage here is they're probably going to trim.
It depends on if they're still going to pull money and funds, or if they're each individually funded, and if
they're all individually funded, so each house will have its own.
If the Division does well, but Splinter Cell and the other games shit the bed, they're just like, all right, sorry guys, we don't have any money for the next Division. You're all out of fucking luck.
That is the downside.
I think that's
whole pillar just gets fucked off.
That is the risk, but I think like that could occur for an individual team anyway. Like if you take it's done.
Sure.
I just think this is, it's narrowing the focus. So you're going to have leaders at each of these creative houses, and the focus is so much more narrowed now.
Mm.
And when I think about Creative House 2 in particular, there is a theme here. Firstly, it's Tom Clancy. But like there is a theme here. And I think you can start picking talent that fits.
Mm.
You understand this. Great. Come here, we're working on Splinter Cell. Your skill set absolutely fits what we're doing with Splinter Cell here. But yours, you're better suited to some open world stuff through this than this, so we're going to get you on the Division.
But at the same time, these skills you have over here on how to, like, you know, traverse terrain in Splinter Cell, that's going to be really helpful for the next Division. So, like, by having them all in that same space is allows for that, you know, cross-pollination, use lay business terms, of skills, right? So, like, even though they're still going to be making, in you know, separate games, I don't think it's going to be, we're only going to work on this one or then this one. They're going to have... It's like, they're just subsidiaries, really. Like, they're like, hey, you're under this pillar. Here's a bunch of teams in this one department.
I think the weird one is the Creative House 3, really, because that's just a...
Whatever can't be allocated.
And honestly, I mean, all these are release games that are out anyway. So it's really, I think, more maintenance than anything else, and upkeep and what's the next season and just continuing to churn out content. But that is the weird one where it feels like like Creative House. So the Vantage, it says Rainbow Six. It doesn't say Siege. It says Rainbow Six. Maybe Siege at some point potentially fits the category of Creative House 3 too, which is, okay, we're just getting you to continue to keep this going.
Mm.
Maybe the Division 3 eventually fits into that, where like, and so that the team that's in Creative House 1 and 2 can then move on to what's the next Rainbow Six, what's the next Division, what's the next whatever, and then 3 is just maintaining and keeping it going.
And like, by extension, a model like this could have allowed The Last of Us Online to happen.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So like, there are absolute benefits to this if you want to look at it from a completely... Like, it is kind of takes away a lot. It is really businessifying, taking away a lot of, like, the art and creative, like, looseness of the development. But, yeah, it does put things where they need to go. And I feel like I'm with you, Pat. I think it feels like it really hits. However, with Max's concern, like, that's absolutely really, really valid. Like, if they're having these couple ongoing games and, you know, two out of three are shithole, then that's bad. But at the same time, it should, in turn... then entice them to ensure that all of them are good. And as we mentioned, as you said, Padge, each of them having their own leaders and their own, you know, different... There's no overarching creative lead of Ubisoft that's all these smaller teams. So they themselves are like, well, I don't have to worry about Assassin's Creed anymore. Like, I, as creative director at Ubisoft at this place, I only
you
have to think about these.
You've created five small publishers.
Yeah. Exactly.
That are ultimately then actually published by Ubisoft, but you've created five small publishers where they're spinning much fewer plates, like far fewer plates. I think in terms of running business, it's huge. The creativity thing, yeah, but I don't think many people these days are going to Ubisoft going, I'm going to go over there, I'm going to create some new revelatory thing.
Yeah, because painting
inside the lines of the next Assassin's Creed. Or
UbiArts, whatever? Yeah, no, what was it called? Yeah,
UbiArts, the UbiArts stuff is long dead.
But at the same time, I think they've also set this up in a way as in like... It's like if you create if you're a staff manager at your workplace, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, Padge, with your teaching days. It's like, I'm going to lump all the shit kids together because then they can just like do whatever they fucking want over there. And if they all fuck around and fail, that's on them. I'm going to put all the, you know, the good kids that work together over here so they can achieve.
Definitely never seen or had anything to do with that.
But you know what, but you know what I mean? There's a little bit of like, all right, well, we're putting all the big, like Vantage, they're not going to die anytime soon. Right? Not like they're safe. But as you said, like three, there's a lot more at risk potential.
And
there.
Vantage is the one that's also got the Tencent investment. That's the one where like 20,
where the big money comes 20 in.
Something percent. And honestly, like going back to your live service thing, you said, you know, if two of these are bust, in the live service game, you only need one to be a success. And that like that was the whole thing with Sony. And obviously it's been a bit of a struggle for them. But you only need one, Helldivers, maybe Marathon, whatever it happens to be. You only need one to pop off and that's it. We're sort of, it'll carry everyone else.
Beautiful.
Until the next one comes along. So, and I think because these are big established IP that they're working on too, I don't think it's at, maybe the ceiling for what they could achieve is lower, but the chances that they will hit that ceiling are higher. Like the Division 3 could be huge, not Fortnite huge, but huge enough that it will carry things along if Splinter Cell remake continues to struggle a little bit, or the next Ghost Recon is another breakpoint. So I think they've got their I think it works really well.
I'd like to see it in practice.
And I actually don't think staff are put out going to be when they actually settle into their spots. Outside of those who are inevitably going to lose jobs because they do want to swing the axe on staff as well. And that's, I think that's separate to the actual structural thing. I think what they want to do structurally is good. And then it's because they've been doing so many things wrong for so many years that they're bloated and they've got to cut people too. And that's the problematic part.
I think we're also going to get less innovation from Ubisoft games now. They're just going to all be, they're just going to be all by the book cookie cutter games because every single creative, house is just going to be like, we have to, if this doesn't work, it has to work to support ourselves, otherwise we're kind of fucked.
But
we're going to have no, it depends on how they structured it and if they are going to use one to save the other, which I don't know if that's the case.
I think they'll be, you know, like if we were to talk about what any random creative house, they'd be like, okay, we'll work on two sure bets at the moment. We know how they're going to go. We can or reliably predict how they're going to go. Well, we've got this third new IP that's maybe still under the Tom Clancy umbrella being spun up where we can try new things. We can try and implement these new systems. We can try and explore. I think there's still scope for them to do that. But again, it's just kind of narrowing things a little bit.
But
for logistical. Nothing more than logistical.
This point got brought up on Sacred this week and you reminded me, Max, is... Like, yeah, Ubisoft do make these things, but that's kind of what they're known for now. Like, this is their bread and butter. Ooh. So it's that weird balance of like, yeah, they're going to keep making more of the same, but that's kind of what they do. And they seem to be reasonably, like they in the past, been more reasonably successful at it. So why not just double down on what you do good?
Because my understanding and from what I've seen online, the creative houses have full financial ownership of their own portfolios inside their own creative houses.
They're in their vertical,
which leads me to believe that if one of them fucks up, that's just gone now.
There's the risk of that, absolutely.
Which is really concerning of like the, if you do have one stellar studio in that creative house and the other two are lacking and that one studio can't put them on their backs and carry them, we run the risk of losing the A team because the Bs and Cs can't pull their weight.
But at the same
time, I understand, but also don't think they'll actually do that though. Like, you know, if they go Massive is smashing it here with Division 3, but all this other stuff's going to shit, they're not just going to kill off Massive. Like, at the end of the day, they're not actually subdividing them into different companies. They all are still Ubisoft. Mm. If we want to keep Massive, we will keep Massive.
Mm.
And we'll kill off these other teams.
But like,
which is obviously very brutal, and I want to hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, for sure. But
they've got that... Yeah, they are answering to themselves at the end of the day. So they can, no, we'll save this company. They're smashing it.
Because that's like, that is all reliant on the assumption that, to use the expression, I think I'm probably using it wrong, is, you know, like you take from, you know, pay, take from Peter to pay Paul or whatever. The idea of the, like, if that's, if that's the assumption that that's how they've been working up until this point, right? So that they've been leveraging the Assassin's Creed money or the Siege money to go out help over here, but we don't know whether that's been the case. It would make sense if, from a bigger company picture, but if funds just start getting divided all over the joint, then you don't really know who's earning what and what's actually successful and what isn't. So, but this way, you're going to very quickly learn out what works, what doesn't, what is financially viable, what isn't. It is really, it's very, yeah, very logical. It's very, like, driven. It's very focused. And, it could go, it's very capitalistic, actually.
I think when you're talking about a company right now who's been struggling for a long time and is trying to pick themselves back up on their feet, this is the best way to do that. And then hopefully in 5 to 10 years, whatever it is, Ubisoft's back on its feet. Its stock value's gone up. Whatever, you know, all the metrics that they need to look at to go, okay, we're healthy again. Then you start to explore a little bit, but you've got this backbone that is solid that you can rely upon. That we go, okay, I can invest some money into this, and maybe it doesn't work, but I've got all these other things propping me up.
I guess the biggest concern now is that we're just going to get reskinned games every year of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And eventually people will be like, is this worth our money anymore? We're just getting the same thing, but it's just in a different setting.
They were going down that path anyway, if anything.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed anyway, right?
For sure. I mean, you know.
So, yeah. So, like, it's one of those things where, like, if we're going to walk this path anyway, let's try walk it in a different way, but we're still going to head in this direction. And if it means we're out, we're out. Well, at least we fought on the way out. You know what I'm saying? But all right, Padge, what's the next one that catches your interest?
I was going to read the next one in line. I've only got about 10 minutes up my sleeve anyway. Well, so Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 3. Square Enix has officially named the third part of the remake trilogy internally.
They haven't told anyone what it is.
They haven't told anyone what it is, but it's only a matter of time. That's probably the big obstacle to actually announcing the thing. And they've also clarified that Queen's Blood, the card game introduced in Rebirth, it was a mini game. It's confirmed to be returning in this third game in an enhanced form, something bigger. Cool. Mm. Still, we don't know a hell of a lot, but cool.
Resident Evil 9.
I just read that ahead. That's just a silly.
Yeah, word. I think. I'm gonna
game is coming out.
So quickly, I'm gonna jump on this, and then I know both you'll be very proud of this. So Phoebe and I were chatting today because she's pushing almost 100 hours into Museum, and she's like, I need something else. I feel like I'm just gonna be lost in here and never escape.
She's also playing Yakuza.
No. We just spitballing ideas.
Play Persona 5.
That was my pitch. My pitch was Persona 5. I'm like, it's a JRPG. Maybe, you know, that's shoot wide, and then we'll shrink down to find what is a Phoebe game. And then she's like, oh, but you know, I've always wanted to play like Final Fantasy.
Yes. Fuck that weeby bullshit in Persona.
So go semi-weeby bullshit with 7. Now, so this is where I need your guidance, by the way.
Get her to play Final Fantasy VII Remake with cheats.
I was going to go, yeah. So
get through it.
She grew up.
The ones that Joel didn't know about. even though he was playing the game.
Conversation that was to have.
So for her, when she thinks about the Final Fantasy she wants to play, it's 10. Because that's what her brother was playing when she was growing up, and she always watched. So should she play 10 or should she play 7 Remake?
I don't think she's going to. There's some nostalgia pulling her towards 10.
What's a better Final Fantasy experience?
Oh, that's not a fair question. That's not a fair question.
they are so wildly different. If you were trying to go, hey, here's what a JRPG is. Even 10's a little bit off the beaten track somewhat, but that is far closer to the mark than what 7 is.
It's 200 bolts of lightning mute for the sigil or crest, not 100. Best done in a dark room and with sound on very high.
Or get some bot to do it for you.
No, I've done it many times.
Oh, if that's the case, at some point many I might give you my login details and you can ping the lightning strikes for me. But anyway, 10's probably the... If she wants to kind of get into JRPGs and not just Final Fantasy.
We're just trying to find what her genre is. So I'm like, you know, because a Persona JRPG is different to like a Final Fantasy JRPG.
Well, it depends. How How interactive of a game does she want? Because 10 is very passive turn-based. Because it is turn-based. It doesn't have like an active time, whereas 7 is active. Yeah, it's an action game.
Oh, yeah.
It's
not turn-based anymore. Difference, eh? Yeah. Because in my head, it was I assume turn-based. I completely forgot about the whole action Meduhi.
I reckon 10. My gut says 10.
Just don't
especially
let her play
because, especially because you've been, you know, talking about the ghost experience and what, like, she's still learning her way through the controls and getting into the swing of things. Like, the tempo is, well, she controls the tempo of it. Yeah. So, but the systems are pretty deep at the same time. So, I think she could really get into the nitty gritty of these things, but not feel like she's, I can't keep up with what they want me to do and stringing this together and then doing this and dropping my summon here. Like, it's all.
It gives you time to think. It gives you time to think.
And it's a dip toe into the Final Fantasy world, and then maybe 7 Remake can come afterwards because, yeah, there is the accessibility stuff and those sorts of things too.
I love it. All right,
10's, not 10's not too difficult either.
Yeah, I remember just playing a fuckload of Blitzball for 10. That's all I remember doing. I don't remember the game at all.
That's probably the bit that's going to shit out the most is Blitzball.
Oh, I'll play that part. I love that game. That was so much fun. Max, I reckon probably just skip this next section because it's just kind of quick bits. Jump onto the industry and hardware section. Oop.
PS Portal has seen some success. The handheld streaming device has reached its highest attach rate yet. In the USA, 7% of all PS5 owners own a Portal.
That's pretty good. What's the total now? Number of PS5s right now? 200
and
something?
I don't know, like 80? 80 something?
I'm just going to read all of these.
I'll check that
number in the meantime.
PS5 Pro Performance, approximately 13% of PS5s sold in the USA in 2025 were Pro models, matching that the original of the PS4 Pro's attach rate.
Awesome.
Ghost of Yotai. 85 million PS5s, by the way.
Cool. Ghost of Yotai, the PS5 exclusive, was the third best-selling game in 2025 in the US and the only single-player game in the top 10.
Nice.
Congratulations.
That's like,
about 6 million.
I was going to say about 6 million, the quick math in my head. That's a lot of fucking.
And that'll be like the 85, it said 84.2. It was 84.2 in late 2025. So we've had a few months, Christmas in the middle of it. That'll be probably pushing closer to 90 now, but last reported figure.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it seems like PS5 Pro is getting, finally getting some good numbers. And it's been around there's been a lot of speculation of like, oh, it's not doing what it should. Blah, 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 blah. Awesome. That's great. I still haven't got mine yet, and I'm still very tempted. But I'm also very aware that, like,
as if it's like, it's, you're like, I've made up my mind.
Because there might come a day where I'm like, fuck it. But
take one off the JB truck.
Well, you're like,
on your way out the door, it's like, thanks,
well,
mate.
The other thing. I was like, okay, maybe, you know, I'm only a Christmas casual. I finish up in a week.
Theft?
What if
you're admitting this on a podcast that's being broadcast publicly?
I go in, I use my staff discount, take a hunk off it, or at least some off it, and then use what I did to buy my
team. And then lay by it.
Use that, what are they, latitude, X amount of months interest free card.
Oh, yeah,
boom. I'll pay it off in no time. That's what I was thinking. Might be good.
That's a cool way to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, quick bit, which is what Max had already touched upon earlier with Call of Duty not doing well at all. But let's jump in to the PS Plus games. For January, essential games are Need for Speed Unbound, Disney Epic Mickey Rebrushed, and Core Keeper. And they're currently available to everyone. But if you're on the Extra / Premium / Deluxe, these are the ones you have access to. You got Resident Evil Village, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, Expeditions, a Mud Runner game, A Quiet Place, The Road Ahead, The Exit 8, Art of Rally, and Rage Racer for the PS1.
Rage Racer.
And then, of course, they are losing some games. Saga Frontier Remastered, The Ascent, Spirit of the North Enhanced, Cult of the Lamb, which has got new DLC out real soon, Super Neptunia RPG, or Kato, Res Infinite, and New World,
Eternum. Eternum.
Sorry.
And that's shutting
down
entirely. Cult
of the Lamb entirely. DLC is out too, by the way. Came out the other day.
Oh, awesome.
So those games are leaving on the 17th of February. The only way to get New World at the moment is through this server. So once it gets, because it's been delisted from all storefronts, if you grab, you can still grab it through the PlayStation Plus extras, apparently. The game doesn't actually shut down until the 31st of January next year. So if you want to check it out, you've got what, the better part of 3-ish weeks to grab it before it's gone forever.
Oh, dang.
Well, and even then, once a game leaves the extra thing, it leaves your library anyway.
Yeah, but yeah. If you
so
can't
it's
buy
only
it,
essential
yeah.
where you can keep it, so you've literally got 3 weeks to play it. That's it.
Yeah.
Because then you won't be able to buy it.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right. If you're not rushing to pick up New World, what are some other games you could rush towards this week, Padge?
On January 26th, I referenced it before, you can go play Highguard, which still no one knows anything about, but there's been lots of people playing it in the last few days.
Isn't it free though?
Trophies are out. Trophies are okay. out. You can see what the
trophies
are
out. You can go see what the trophies are.
It's free to play.
Yeah, but a lot of it is free to play. I think this is going to, like, there's going to be a lot of people playing it initially because there's so much curiosity around this.
I'm curious.
Most people are expecting it to be a turd, but I also wouldn't be surprised if all these people who've been ducky on it are completely wrong. Next up, we've got Speedball for PS5, Umami Grove for PSVR 2 on January 29th. Can, I didn't realize that's just snuck out. That's the mountain climbing one, right?
Yep.
Dusk Index, Geon. Sure. Geon for PS5. I hate this place, is what I'll say to my employers on January 29th. on January 30th, Code Vein 2 for PS5, Front Mission 3 Remake for PS5 and PS4, and the 9th Channel? Hang on, sorry.
Yeah, I think it's Carnal.
Yeah, I don't know. PS5. Yeah. And January 31st, we got No Longer Human for PS5 and PS4, and The Courier for PS5.
I think it's like that Chameleon.
I'll probably fuck with Highguard. It's free. I'll download it and be like, ha! And then not play it. I'm sure.
I'm still unsure if I should check out Code Vein 2. It seems right up my alley. I didn't play the first one. Apparently, that doesn't matter. Seems like this is a separate story.
I got an email. So, I to get code.
Did you? It's Bandai, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I can reach out and ask.
I love a good Bandai game.
Nice.
Well, speaking of Bandai games, Dragon Ball Z announced a game today on their live stream. It's coming out next year, apparently.
All right. Speaking of nothing, I got no segue. Padge has to go. Padge has got fucking places to be. He has to go.
Speaking of, I hate this place.
Speaking of, I hate this place. Padge is fucking out of here. All right, let's get out of here, Max. You know what you're doing.
All right, everybody. This PlayStation Conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you want to take part in future conversations with us, you know the drill. Check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. Those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/spopculturist. We watch us record the show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, or comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And I'm Paul James.
And that was For the Players. All right, Padge, go talk sports.
I gotta go.
All right, love you all. Bye.